Ready. All right, here we go in 3, 2, 1. What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Youth versus Professional Soccer Considerations. We got Kurt Andrews back. Kurt, before we get started with any of this, this was kind of like your idea to bring us out here. And then it was pretty quickly thrown together by the time, you know, you kind of got it approved and got us out here. And it's really been a cool experience. So as John and I were talking, every one of you guys, the professional soccer ATs, has been open and willing to talk and share. And, hey, you know, if you need something else, let me know. John McGregor was telling Seiko over here, whatever other podcast you want to do, just give me a call. We'll jump on Skype, you know, pretty much everybody. And then all the vendors here you guys have as well. So great job putting on this show, friendly. And, again, we did talk to Ron, and he said, you know, PSATs is you have to be actually working professional soccer. So it's not like everybody can come, but with us here, everybody gets to share in your knowledge and your experience. So thank you, sir.
Yeah, on behalf of PSATs, obviously, thank you guys for coming. It was haphazardly thrown together at last minute, but obviously with our previous work together, it wasn't too hard.
Right.
I know there's been a lot of good receptions from both vendors and also members of the society you guys have interviewed, so it's been a positive experience all around, and I'm glad you saved the best for last today.
Of course. Says the guy who did the schedule.
You don't have to keep saying that.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that. All right, so we're talking about youth versus soccer considerations. So John told me earlier a little bit of the breakdown, but here, you know, like I live in Houston, so we got the Dynamo, but we also have kids that won't play on the high school team because they play on the Dynamo Club Academy. So talk to me a little bit about the levels and how they work up and funnel up, and because like in baseball they got single A, double A, triple A, but in soccer they don't have those.
Sure. So, yeah, it's very similar, I think, in structure when you look at soccer versus baseball, when you're looking at the minor league systems. So in soccer here in America, we've got the Major League Soccer at the top or at the pinnacle of what the soccer kingdom is. Just below that, you've got the USL, which has been recently reformatted into three different divisions. All MLS clubs have a participating USL club, sort of minor league affiliate or in-house minor league team. Here at Sporting Kansas City, our minor league system is called Swope Park Rangers. And then below those three leagues, part of like the pro pathway and obviously allowing kids to develop from a young age to eventually becoming, as their goal, a professional soccer player is the academy system. Like you alluded to, a lot of these kids now are not going to high schools or playing on high school teams because if they're a good talent, they're scouted at 8, 9, 10 years old and put into whether they're affiliate academy clubs, so, you know, a local, I don't even know what they're called anymore, like the Vardars, like your AYSO teams.
Yeah.
So at Sporting Kansas City, we have 6 academy clubs, or academy teams, I'm sorry, U12, 13, 14, 15, 17s and 19s. And within our outreach of our regional pool, we have a lot of affiliate organizations where if they feel they've got a talented youth member, they're able to kind of contact us and say, hey, we've got a kid we feel is going to fit within your system, and then we bring them in. I would say when you look at our academy system or our youth soccer system, we are near the top. I think there are some in this country that do a better job. And when I say that, namely Salt Lake and Philadelphia, they have academy systems where they house their kids in a dorm-like system. So they go to school full-time at a high school or some sort of like adult-led kind of like adult school to kind of get their GEDs and do a high school education on top of having a somewhat of a pro curriculum where you're training every day and alongside or near the USL and MLS club. So we do it in a similar fashion. Kids that are not from the local Kansas City area, they are put in host families. And so we've got a really unique system where we've got we call her a mother of the club, but she's the one that organizes all the kids coming in and puts them in high schools, puts them in host families, and really coordinates how these kids get to and from practice and how they are going to be integrated into our system. So it's it's been a really cool transition for myself. Obviously, this is my first year here. We strive to be the gold standard when it comes to at least medical care of these kids. We've got a really amazing relationship with Children's Mercy Hospital, who employ two full-time athletic trainers to oversee these six teams under our care, or under our, I guess, guidance or our curriculum of sports medicine. And we work alongside five different physicians, and the way we have it structured is the two ATs have three teams each, and each doctor has a team. So as kids grow in age, they keep the same doctor. So if you came in with the U12s, and that was the physician that was assigned to the U12s that year, that doc then graduates with the team. So they have a true understanding of any sort of previous injury history, and kind of a familiarity with the athlete. We're very lucky as well to have a fairly decent facility as well that's shared with Children's Mercy Hospital, where we have PTs on staff, and they see our kids to kind of take away some of the burden of us having to do the physical therapy on top of the coverage of training. So it's very helpful for the athletic trainers on staff to then outsource to PTs and have work on their communication with that PT, and then be that bridge the gap kind of with the reintegration into your performance-based training until you kind of are medically cleared to return to full. So since I started in 2012, this league has grown tremendously. There was no USL. What we had at the time, it was the reserve league, where it was kind of like you had a squad of 35 and 18 down, plus a little bit of the fringe guys that were on the bench. That they got their match minutes in the reserve league. Well, that didn't last long. And part of, I think, US's plan into growing soccer, growing the talent in this country, and trying to retain it for the most part as well, is giving kids a proper pathway from a young age and giving them access to world-class facilities and world-class organizations here domestically as opposed to going abroad.
So, I talked to Ron a little bit earlier, and we talked about the growth of PSATs, and that's obviously been important in growing the membership here, but also once you start growing the membership, you start showing the importance of athletic training with the care of not only the first team athletes, but those kids that are all the way down onto U8s, U12s, and then helping them through with understanding what athletic training is, how to take care of their bodies, and assisting themselves within recovery. That way, once they land to you, or a kid's fortunate enough to come to you at 23 years old, they know how to kind of care for themselves, but also you can help guide them too.
Yeah, so, athletic trainers tend to be a jack of all trades, right?
Right.
We're very lucky in the first team setting to be a multidisciplinary team and have the luxury of having a full-time PT, a full-time massage therapist, multiple staff members on the performance team. So we're able to do what we're intended to do. But when you kind of work down the chain, the athletic trainers tend to be sometimes that performance coach that helps with the warm-up or the cool-down, sometimes tends to be the dietitian, And so it's important for us to have basic knowledge of all those principles. With Tori being here today, kind of addressing how there is a change in our educational format and making sure we are ready when, quote-unquote, ready at least for that first job when we come out of school, having a true understanding of what we need to do so that we end up being the best athletic trainer we can for whatever position we're in. And like you said, it's important that these 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds understand why we're there. And to be honest, at those ages, you tend to deal with the parents a lot more than you do with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important, too, from a parent perspective, to know that your kid is in good hands of someone who is there on a daily basis, cares for their child, and will provide the health care that kid needs. In case there is any sort of life emergency or simple injury that needs to have some sort of treatment, it mitigates having the parent having to go to a PT clinic and do that kind of stuff if we're in house. So it's important that we athletic trainers have these kids understand that. And I think as they, and I'll speak for Sporting Kansas City and a lot of these clubs, kids, as they come up the pro pathway, they understand our role and what our purpose is, and
right.
they come to us with those kind of issues. Sometimes we tend to be a psychologist as well and hear things that are, you know, normal daily problems of growing up and and going through maturity, and you'll hear things that are probably unrepeatable on this podcast, but it's just...
We can always shut the audio off.
it's the realm we deal in, and it's a very rewarding job.
Right.
It truly is, and I'm afforded the luxury as well in just the first team setting to have my youngest pro athlete's 15 years old, and the oldest is 33. So I have a broad range of different athletes, and it's important also for us from being a role model standpoint is teaching these young kids, 15, 18, 20-year-old kids, one, how to be an adult, two, how to be respectful, be a good person, and understand what it is, not only from a recovery standpoint and from a medical standpoint, but also life and teaching them about what they need to do outside of soccer.
Right.
So you guys have kind of kids throughout the system, but what you're also doing in those academies or housing those kids, you have athletic trainers that take care of those kids. Now, I don't know how often a kid is in, year one of the academy and then they don't make it to year two. But one of the things that I think is kind of cool is that they have an athletic trainer there. So then when they go to play on their club team, they know that something's missing. Mm-hmm. Right. So one of the good things is definitely the awareness of athletic trainers and appropriate medical care for those games and tournaments, whereas most of the time those weekend tournaments aren't covered at all by anybody, EMS, anybody. And so now those kids that have been part of the academy in some form or fashion are now at least experiencing appropriate medical care. So that's one of the things that's really cool that you guys are doing. One of the things that we always get caught in, the pros do this, the pros do this, the pros do this. And so just discuss a little bit, the workout, the programming, the recovery periods that you guys do at the pro level. And I know you said you got 15-year-old kids at the pro level kind of thing. So just talk to me a little bit about that. What we should expect to say if someone says, well, they do that at the pros, what does that really mean?
It's going to honestly differ from organization to organization and where you put your eggs in what baskets. I think it's important, and I'll speak more so from our side of things, from Sporting Kansas City, but we like to operate on a two-pillar or two-tier attack that's blended between medical and performance. One department isn't higher than the other. We are collaborative in our approach for the main goal of complete healthcare. So when you talk about what we do in the pros, how do we prepare? What are we doing to screen these athletes? When they come in and do their entrance physicals, do we know how they move from a functional standpoint, from a tabletop standpoint and joint-by-joint assessment? What sort of previous injuries have they had? Obviously, taking a look at EKG and echoes, does their heart just work at a normal physiological level? Obviously, in the pros, you're afforded more luxury, so some sort of body fat testing. Are you doing resting metabolic rates to look at just basic nutritional profile, something that we do with our team? We're lucky, again, to be in a fantastic facility where we've got a Cosmed cart. So we take a resting metabolic rate in physicals. We're able to take GPS loads or external loads from the stat sports units that we wear and get an idea of whatever day in the microcycle of the week. We're able to at least calculate a rough estimate of how much caloric expenditure they have on the field during a training session. So at a baseline level, we have an understanding of what sort of nutritional profile they need on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, leading up to a game on a Saturday. What sort of urinary analysis are you doing? What sort of we've got a system called DARI. It's through Scientific Analytics. That has a 3D motion capture. So when guys come in, we've got a rigorous movement assessment. Call it your quote-unquote FMS. Again, it's a screening tool. It gives us a good idea how they move in a stationary movement pattern and some sort of functional capacity testing with triplanar movements. We've got a system where we're looking at joint-by-joint isometric testing to understand where their weaknesses are. Our goal truly is to find out their breaking point and make it better, all in the goal of trying to make a more robust athlete. So something that we do at Sporting Kansas City is we've got a very thorough profile of an athlete after our entrance physicals, and we try to bleed that down the system as best as we can, as time permits, as financials allow us. With our academy system and through CMH, we do Y balance testing. We do the Dari motion or some sort of movement testing with them, not at a higher level or more testing in terms of how much what we're doing with them, but at a basic level so we have a true understanding, because when you actually look at these 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, if you have them stand single leg, eyes closed, they can't do it. So if you think about it, why are you going to load them with weights or put them in a gym program if they can't just demonstrate a single leg balance? You know what I mean? So we're doing a lot of research and profiling on kids when it comes to concussion testing. I don't think anyone's done that yet. With us, we do VSR testing. It's like a balance it's a balance test on a force plate. We do King Devic with our guys, along with impact testing through the DA or through U.S. Soccer. One as a goal to kind of understand kids as they develop through their age, how they develop from a cognitive point of view. But there's a lot to be done, I think, at the youth level when it comes to testing, because we don't truly know. And I think a big emphasis that our staff as a whole and our organization has discussed this year is trying to mitigate youth injuries. I think now, and I'll hold our hand up and say we're guilty of it, and I think we are not the anomaly here. You know, there's a large shift with overtraining or a lot of training with these kids now. If you want these 10, 11, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids training every day, it's too much from a tissue capacity for them. And so how do we then relook at our methodical approach to how we technically, tactically, and physically build these kids from a young age until you're 19 years old in our academy system? We don't want to take someone who's got a very strong tactical and technical background and have them be broken by the time they're 19 and at the age where you can sign them to a minor league contract.
Right.
You know, we want them to develop in all aspects of the game. And so it's been a big talking point for us as a medical performance and coaching staff and even our scouting staff. How do we scout kids? Who do we bring in? I mean, you want a blend of soccer players plus athletes. I think that's going to create a very strong team or 11 amongst a lot of other things when it comes to soccer. But it's important that we're doing a very good job of screening these athletes when they come in, to kind of get back to your question. And so when you say, how do you do it as a pro? Well, I mean, these kids in the academy systems, they're kind of a pro. They're not paid by any means, but they're treated like a pro. They're given meals. They're given lodging sometimes. They're given schooling sometimes. And so it's almost an expedited process to going to college at a very, very young age. So I don't want to say treat them like a pro, because you want them to understand it's like when you go from elementary school to middle school, you were at the top of the food chain in fifth grade. All of a sudden in sixth grade, you're back at the bottom and there's the pecking order. And so it's something that I think we're all guilty of as well. When you look at the youth and you've got a 15-year-old kid and he comes in like he's some hot stuff, and then he realizes, oh my God, I'm half the age of some of these kids. And to be honest, they've got a target on their back. And so our 15-year-old, when he's come in, I mean, lucky for him, he's been injured when he came in. So he's been held out since he signed in October. And we've had a long process of building him back up. But having the talks like, hey, just so you know, in preseason, everyone has a target on your back. And you will get hit. They're going to test you. They're going to try to break you. And what's important is you get up, you show them resiliency, and you work your ass off. It's right. Important to show you belong here and you were signed for a good reason. So there's the medical component of how treating these kids like a pro, but then there's also the psychological and way of making these kids more mature from a life perspective as well.
Yeah,
I love that you just spent like 4 minutes listing the things that you do before
you ever treat them. Like, you check this, you test this, you check this, you test this. You really, when they're on the with their club coach on the weekend, they don't test any of that. They just see how hard you can kick the ball, how fast you can run. Mm-hmm. They don't check any of that. They're not doing any of these other things that you just spent 4 minutes listing as a medical professional. It takes you days to do. So if, as an athletic trainer, you're listening and you want to take something, take that little section where Kurt was right there, like 4 minutes saying this is what the pros do. This is what you have to do to be a professional soccer player. Take that and let them listen to that and say, is your club coach doing this for you? Then they're probably causing you more damage than good. And take that and apply that to your kids, because it's going to help you, but it's more importantly going to help that kid stay healthy. So, John?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, not just with soccer, but you're also seeing it with basketball, baseball, and maybe even football a little bit too, is just this oversaturation of club sports and the amount of teams that are in the club sports. And even when we look at the DA Academy, you know, like I work with Vardar on the side, and I come in and I see a really good club come in and play. I think Vardar is a very good club in itself. But then we'll get a team come in from, Midwest somewhere, and they're terrible. Well, it's just because there's three other clubs in that area, but they're also DA clubs. So you just have this oversaturation, which creates that challenge for us as athletic trainers, as medical professionals, to provide care. And I think that's, you know, one of the things we were talking about is there's a difference between care and coverage. And somebody that's an athletic trainer in secondary school, I provide care because I'm at my school every single day, or I'm there and get to know the kids. There's unfortunately some high schools that only get coverage, you know, for a football game, or maybe 10 hours a week or whatever it is. Yeah. I think that's the nice thing about us being here is we're communicating. That was when I've talked to Jeremy about this. The thing we kept hearing over and over is the communication between this community and between everybody here, but not just here, but outside of this group too. And, we're all in it for really the same reason. Right. And it's the care of our athletes, whether they're the U8 kid or they're your international player that's on big money.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned care, and obviously it's something that you have to possess. I think as an athletic trainer, you have to truly care about your athletes, and something that we put a big impetus on is my two athletic trainers from the academy system, they travel with our kids full time. Mm-hmm. So when they are at these DA showcases and they go on these weekend tournaments, one of the athletic trainers is traveling with them. And it's important that we are caring for them. And when they report back, it's always saying, there was coverage of an athletic trainer at the event in the case of an emergency, or in the case that one of the teams that traveled there didn't have an athletic trainer. But I think it's important that we, if Sporting Kansas City wants to be the gold standard and show that we are going to be the ones that truly understand what it is to care for the youth, it's important that athletic trainers are also there traveling with the team. They're involved with the assisting in like the meals. So your pregame meal, your postgame meal, breakfasts, team walks, any sort of recovery strategies. Obviously, you play multiple games on a weekend, so what are we doing? You know, we try to provide the modalities that we have at the first team. So your recovery pumps, your Theraguns, certain things like that they can at least travel with, and probably in a smaller capacity than what we're able to do with on the first team, from a financial perspective, but also from a logistical perspective. Because sometimes there's only one performance coach in the academy, so he can't be in multiple places at one time. And so, again, as athletic trainers, we're jack of all trades, and we end up having to kind of take on that role in the absence of our strength coach. So it goes back into caring for these athletes on multiple levels and just being there. And it's obviously it's helpful that the parents know too, when these kids are traveling, that there's someone there that can take care of them in the case of emergency, if they're sick, if they need to go to the hospital. They have someone that they can at least depend on or rely on that's an adult that can do that. And sometimes the coach is busy doing other things, doing coach duties. It's cool that we have an athletic trainer there on the road with them.
Very, very good. Talking about the programming, you know, like I said, they'll play on weekend tournaments, and then I have some kids that will play for the high school, and then they'll play on the weekends, and they'll even travel to, you know, 4, 6, 8 hours away to play on a weekend and then come back and play again. What does the programming for a, like an established professional soccer athlete look like? Does he play for the season and then doesn't do anything soccer-related for a month? I know Ivan earlier said that soccer is a really long season and it's a grind, or maybe it was Chris, I think.
I think everybody said that.
Yeah, probably everybody.
Football's a 13-month-long season.
Yeah.
Are we off? Do we have off time? I don't know. You're referring just to the first team guys?
An established professional player.
So just to kind of give an idea of our schedule, obviously we have this now. We have physical starting January 12th, in which the team reports to do, all the testing that we're supposed to do per league-mandated rules, also in any sort of screening test that a club wants to do. We leave on January 13th to head to preseason, and preseason goes. So your typical season now that it's changed in a new format will run from beginning of March until the beginning of October. We play a minimum of 34 games. There's obviously U.S. Open Cup. You can be involved in CONCACAF Champions League, so you can play up to 42 games, maybe 44 games before you even hit playoffs. You know, and obviously if you advance in playoffs, you're going to play another four. So you can play up to 50 games in a year, not including preseason games. So what we've done in the past, and again, the schedule has changed a bit this year. So previously you'd go from January, mid-January, until, I mean, the final for the MLS Cup that you went to is
December 8th.
December 8th.
Yeah, so first week, second week of December.
An 11-month season. So for us, if you are a team, and when I was with the Galaxy, I was with two MLS Cup champion teams, your season goes 11 months. And so for us as a medical staff and performance staff, you're telling guys, get the hell out of here. Like, take a mental break, recharge the batteries, spend time with family. And so they're given a mandated 2 weeks off at the end of the season, whether that's it's per CBA rules, but also a recommendation of both performance and medical staffs. Again, it's a mental recharge, just because it's a grind, and you don't want to create burnout. We don't want to create any sort of psychological issues with guys who don't want to be there. We try to keep around the guys that have had maybe end of the year surgeries, postseason surgeries, or are somewhere in or near the end stage of rehab with us as long as possible, to keep them under our care, and then try to coordinate care. You know, again, we're a team that's very multi-eclectic. We've got guys from all sorts of different parts of the world, so trying to figure out and tie up loose ends and where they can do their rehab, who they can do it with, creating some sort of communication plan or pathway between myself, our full-time PT, and the players, so we know, and obviously the performance staff, so we know that they know what they're doing, that they know they can always ask us questions. And also connecting us with the physio or athletic trainer or performance person, whoever it is that they're working with, whether it be in country or out of country, just so there's an understanding of when they come back the following year, what's the starting point that they're coming in at. So something that we do and other clubs will do is captain's practices. It's a way to encourage guys to come back before the mandated time, to kind of get acquainted with training again. Something that we do in Sporting KC, our players do a player retreat. We're very lucky to have an ownership group that's very involved with us, with our players. They're involved on a daily basis. They're in and around the facilities. They are a local company or a local group of people. So they go down to the ranch, probably about 35, 40 minutes south of Kansas City, and the guys get to kind of hang out. It's a weekend full of fun, shooting guns. It's a way to build team bonding, team camaraderie. So because this is such a grueling season, it's good that these guys come back, kind of get a fresh mind, fresh perspective, and we hit the ground running, and we don't look back. So there's a difference. If you look at what the pro level does, the USL level is the same. I mean, their season is just as long as ours are. And then the academy, it's very similar to a college setup. You've got basically a fall and a spring season where the summer's off, and maybe you've got 2 months off in between there. And kids that are part of host families, they go home and they get to see their families and spend time at home. But again, it's keeping constant communication with these kids, just so we have an understanding of what's going on and we have some sort of knowing of what they're doing and if anything happens, how can we be involved and assisting parents or whatnot in local markets.
Do y'all have rules for or recommendations for the number of games you could play in a week? Like, you can't play more than three in a week or...
So, we'll have recommendations, right? Coaches also have their recommendations. So, I'm very lucky to have a coach who's understanding and will listen to both the medical and performance staffs in terms of our suggestions. Sometimes at the end of the day, if you've got a Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday fixture or a Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday microcycle or three games in a week or a Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, ideally you change the team. If you play guys 90 minutes, three games in a week, you're obviously increasing the risk of any sort of injury. But it's also important that it's important too that I lost track of it.
You're talking soccer. Go on.
It's important that we provide suggestions to the coach. And again, it's based on both subjective and objective measures. So are you using GPS data to influence decisions? Are you using some sort of internal load monitoring, whether that be some HRV, RPE statuses, wellness questionnaires? What are you doing as a staff or as an athletic trainer or as a group to make informed decisions to obviously put together a plan for the coach so he can put out the best 11 on the field? And hoping that the coach has an understanding for that. But like I said, sometimes coaches have their own game plans and you cross your fingers in those situations. It is what it is. Injuries occur, and obviously our goal is to mitigate them and minimize them as much as possible, but we're there to pick up the pieces when they do, and that's just it's what we do best.
So, Kurt, you talked about, you know, you oversee that youth academy, the athletic trainers that work there. Obviously, you have your own staff and a very large that gets a little bit larger. How often do you or do you even get a chance to kind of get down into the youth levels to kind of get your hands dirty and to interact with those athletic trainers or those athletes? Do you get a chance to do that often?
Sure. We're to kind of paint a picture of our situation and our profession or sorry, our organization with where we are. First team is completely separate from USL and academy.
Right.
The way that system's built is we want these kids here at the youth system and the USL to strive to be with the first team. We don't want them to feel like they've made it. So
right.
There is a geographical distance between myself and the athletic trainers over with the USL and academy teams. So I'm obviously very in an oversight position. They have a lot of autonomy in terms of what they do, and we want it to be on par with what we're doing here at the first team. We want continuity from top down, so that way when kids promote themselves throughout the pro pathway, there's an understanding of what is expected, what is done. It's a goal of mine to be more involved this year in presence when I go over to Swope to be a part of the academy and at least see what's going on over there. I think it's important that you keep in touch with the staffs over there, the players over there. The academy staffs, coaching and medical, along with USL, they, because of our schedule and time on a daily basis, we train in the morning where they train in the afternoon. A lot of times they come over to our facility and are part of our training session, so we try to keep a face-to-face connection through that way. I'm guilty of not being able to make it over to the younger kids all the time. It's a goal of mine to do better at that, and I know I can do that. It's by no means a burden on my part, because I find it's important that I'm over there being a part of the medical staff and keeping that connection between the two properties. But at the same token, my staff over there knows if both Mo and Isaac are on the road with their teams, and we've got an academy team that's back, and I've been known to go over cover a training session. I've been known to go over and cover futsal games in the janky arenas in Kansas. God knows what's on these walls. But I think it's important for these kids to know that we at the first team are not too big time to come down and spend time with them.
Right.
And I think it's important also that we have a presence there and show face. And it means a lot to the kids. It means a lot to the medical staff and also the coaching staff. You know, we don't want them to feel like it's two entities, two properties. We're all a collective whole. And I think everyone within this organization knows that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
All right, so Kurt, somebody wants to get a hold of you. How are they going to do that?
Honestly, I'm the best. If you send me an email to my work email, I'm pretty good at responding back to that. It's kandrews, KANDREWS, at sportingkc.com. I do have Twitter. I don't use it very often. I'm more of a research venue for me, and I do stay active on that. I'll respond to direct messages, and obviously I see this guy shout me out, and you shout me out occasionally. So that is at KurtAndrews_ATC. That is at KurtAndrews_ATC. You can get a hold of me through either one. Obviously, I'm open to any and all questions. I have a 30-minute drive to and from work, so it's when I get a lot of good phone calls in. So if there's something that you feel is pertinent to talk to over the phone or more in depth, that's an easy thing for me to do as well.
All right, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/youthsoccer. But Kurt was also on the podcast, I guess it's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/leadershipandrews, where John was doing a series on leadership. And so, again, that John said that was episode 469. Is there said 469?
Yeah, 469 is the episode.
So you can check out episode 469, Kurt, previously. That was an in-studio one, and you don't get all the benefit of this gigantic background noise we got going on right now, because they just let everybody out and they got the social going on. So
social's picking up and it's getting a little bit louder.
A little bit of social drinking going on, and it's getting a little crazy.
Best.
But Kurt, man, I really appreciate it. If someone wants to get a hold of them, reach out there. If you didn't get all that, then I'll have it on the show notes again. sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/youthsoccer, or the previous one was Leadership Andrews. So for Jeremy, John, the last show here at PSATS 2019, live in Orlando, that is a wrap. Thank you.
Made it.